years come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times, somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Today's episode is focused on our listeners, you, meeting a relatively new employee and co-worker of mine at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. His name is Levi Day, and Levi is the new Conservation Leadership Program Manager. How's that for a mouthful? For Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Are you wondering what that means? So am I. We're going to find out. We're going to find out who Levi is, his background, his career leading up to this point, and his vision for that title, once again, which is Conservation Leadership Program Manager. Levi, thank you very much for joining me. And, you know, grinning as I make fun of your title.
No, I totally understand. My wife and I joked about it quite a bit initially, too, because I think I had to recite it multiple times to even be able to tell people what it was, because it took me a little bit to digest it as well. So I completely understand that.
I've got a mouthful, too. Chief Marketing and Communications Officer. What does that mean?
Right. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, every entity that you're a part of has their own wording for structure. The structure and how things work, and you know, I'm always having to ask questions about, okay, so how does this work? Who's this? What does this mean?
Right.
You know, yeah. So I totally understand.
It'd be nice to just, I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been able to have that role before too. So I understand that.
Levi Day. Tell us a little bit about who you are. I say Levi, you know, it's Levi Day. It's sort of like an action hero name.
I've got that before.
Have you?
Yeah, I have. I actually was in an airport. It's been a few months ago now, sometime in the summer. But someone was like, "That sounds like you should be." I got the action hero. You should be a superhero, or maybe a politician. I was like, "Well, you obviously."
I don't know.
I'm going to just go with no comment on that.
Was there you go?
Yeah. There we go. Fell right in line.
Well, tell us about, where'd you grow up?
Well, I was born in Boise, but soon after that moved to Central Oregon, and that's where I grew up.
Okay.
Redmond Bend area. And
Redmond?
Yeah.
Bend.
Okay. Yeah, the two areas two are close.
Gotcha.
Most people don't know where Redmond is, which, mm-hmm, I'm a diehard Redmond guy, but so I always have to say Bend, even though they were arch rivals to us. But
yeah. It's like Escanaba and Gladstone for the Upers out there.
Right. So after high school, I, you know, my wife and I met her soon after that, and you know, I've had 18 wonderful years of marriage to an amazing woman. And my dad had sold our ranch when I was a sophomore in college, and he moved to a little town in Idaho, and we decided we wanted to make our lives back over there too. So when I was done with college, we went back over there where I started a career in education.
Okay. So you were a teacher.
I was a teacher. Yeah. Yeah. I spent the better part of two decades in the education world,
okay,
spanning from everything from, you know, middle school English teacher. I taught PE health at the middle school level, and then went and helped develop some PE programs at an alternative high school, and then some smaller schools back in Oregon again. And then ended up being the director of athletics at a community college. There was the position I had prior to coming to Pheasants Forever.
Huh. Director of athletics. So,
yeah.
So scheduling.
Oh gosh, you name it. Chief cook and head bottle washer, yeah, was pretty much. We were a smaller institution, but I had 13 sport programs and 22 coaches and 3 complexes. And within that, then we did everything from, handled all the scheduling, all the transportation, all of the maintenance staff, managed all of that, the budget, communications and marketing outside of the colleges, but within the realm of athletics, all the fundraising. Did it all.
At a community college.
Yeah.
So it's like an athletic director that, you know, comparable for, so pick your favorite Big Ten or SEC, right?
Yeah.
But you're doing it all yourself.
Correct.
At a community college.
Correct. So some things were a much smaller scale, But also on the other hand, yeah, where it was an athletic coordinator and myself. So we handled everything. Huh. So I've had my hands in a little bit everything from, you know, dealing with athlete conduct all the way up to, you know, difficult conversations around budget in the boardroom. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of done a little bit of it all.
Teacher, like classroom.
Classroom teacher.
Okay. Yeah. How long did you do that?
I was in the classroom for 13, 14 years. And my career then just took, you know, some crazy turns too. I ended up at a small school, in North Central Oregon, where I was originally, I came to help them develop a PE program. And then 2 years later was the dean of students as well. And then also was the athletic director. And, so I pretty much had a cot there, it felt like. And, yeah, it just led into another opportunity that, got us back closer to home. And my dad is getting older and has some health issues. So it was nice to be back close to him.
So I want to ask about this, because it feels like this is a little bit of a career curveball, right?
Yeah.
So I want to get to that, but I was curious about, as a kid growing up, did you always know you wanted to be a teacher?
No. Hmm. No. And that's a great question, because it, you know, when I think about the career transition that I've recently just taken part in, my dream was always to do anything that I could do outside, was to figure out a way to leverage my passions. And there just didn't feel like I had the exposure. It was probably there, but I was too busy being a kid and not paying attention and spending all my time hunting and fishing and doing other things.
So,
but
you did grow up as an outdoors
person. Yeah, 100%. I grew up on a ranch, and hunting and fishing was, and just being outside in general was everything. Whether it was, I can remember being, you know, 5 years old and I couldn't get on a horse on my own, so I'd lead one up to the haystack and jump on and take the strainer, you know, out of the kitchen and ride down to the pond on the ranch and go catch tadpoles. You know, I mean, it was whatever I could do to just be outside. I was fortunate enough to have a lot of space to run around, and always had the BB gun and a dog out chasing rabbits or whatever, you know, getting lost, building forts, just doing fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So, all the way back to, I can remember fishing, you know, the local creek on the ranch and having a friend over, and we'd take milk jugs and cut the bottoms of them out. And this is the, you know, during the area of my time was, you know, like Bill Dance and Jimmy Houston and like, and pretend we were filming fishing shows, you know, stuff that just, you know, we all have those embarrassing stories, I guess, as kids.
We do.
But, it was always something that I really wanted to do. And then I think, you know, life happens and, we pursue different avenues or expose to different things, and maybe we find a little bit of success and have some affirmation, and that ends up being the direction that we continue to go into. And for me, growing up on a ranch, another big part of my life was rodeo. And it was something that was introduced to me at a very young age, and again, it was indoctrination. I didn't know any different, and I had a rope in my hand if I didn't have, you know, a fishing rod or a gun. And
Well, Levi Day sounds kind of like a cowboy name.
Yeah.
How big a belt buckle do you have?
Right now, I don't. It's funny. I bet I haven't been on a horse in 10 years. But
really?
Yeah. And it was something that I had some relatively high levels of success at. I won 3 state titles in high school and went on to college.
In Oregon?
Yeah. Went on to college on a full athletic scholarship for rodeo.
Kidding.
Yep. And rodeoed professionally then until I was probably 25.
Wow.
Yeah. So
any bumps and bruises that you're carrying
No,
with you?
No. I mean, it's funny. And I think back, I mean, I've had minor stuff, you know, you tear a meniscus or something like that. But most of my more major injuries have came from sports still, but I was a wrestler also. Okay. So like I've got a shoulder that I broke really bad, and you know, I did dislocate a hip once, and but I mean, for comparatively to what some people have been through, now I got away pretty much unscathed.
Give us the couple minute rodeo as you head South Dakota west. People know what that means,
right?
As you head South Dakota east, it's like, what does that mean? Are you a bull rider? Are you a rope?
Right.
Are you a clown? Like, what do you do?
I have a funny story about that, too. So, actually, when I first got my first teaching job, they did an article on me in the local newspaper, and the reporter quoted me as a rodeo clown. Which was, my wife got a great
kick out of
that.
So I wasn't fired up.
No. She got a great kick out of that. But no, I was a timed event guy. So my main events was the Calf Rope and the Steer Wrestling.
Calf Rope?
Yeah.
So is this the 8-second deal?
No. So 8 seconds is any of your rough stock events. So your bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, your bull riding. But the timed events are, you know, you would do an event four time. Gotcha. And fastest time wins. The Calf Rope was my main event. I'm obviously not the biggest guy in the world.
This is radio, so
I know. So I'm very much undersized when it comes to the world of steer wrestling, but in the high school and college rodeos, I'm 5'10", 155 pounds right now. But you know, lots and lots of hard work and get to where you can be relatively efficient in your technique, and you can still do some pretty great things. So
cool.
For me, it was something that I didn't do at the pro rodeos on that level. I roped calves with my main deal, but yeah, I still wrestled quite a bit too.
That's I haven't had a rodeo pro on before.
At least
not that
passed.
I'm aware of.
Yeah.
All right. So you grew up as a hunter. You had dogs around?
Yeah, I do now. I had dogs then. We had just working dogs, you know, on the ranch.
Gotcha.
Well, I'll use the term working very loosely, but I grew up with dogs, always had dogs around. We had border collies and we ran cows. So yeah, that was definitely part of it. I had some exposure when I was younger to being able to go out and hunt birds with dogs, and it was never a very positive experience. All I saw was people that were yelling at dogs and dogs that didn't work. And I didn't have a clue. Right.
Over the horizon.
Right. And I didn't really have a clue either, you know, but I knew I was excited. I thought it was going to be something that was, you know, that's the dream. And I had visioned in my mind of this dog going out and going on point, and I get to walk up and I have all this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't quite that. Mm-hmm. But a deep love for dogs, and luckily was able to then, when I, you know, a little later in life, was able to go back towards that and get some dogs of my own. And it's been awesome.
And so what do you have now?
I currently have a 7-year-old Griff and a 3-year-old short hair.
Wider haired pointing Griffon. Yeah.
Mine looks much more like a standard wire hair. And she is pretty atypical with a lot of the characteristics associated with the Griff. She's a little bigger running. She's not quite so aloof. She used to be. It's weird. As soon as we introduced the other dog into the house, she became a lot more loving and wanting to be around us. But I feel very, very fortunate. I have two very nice dogs. And
how old is the Griff?
She's 7.
And how old is the short hair?
3.
3, okay.
Yeah.
So why'd you go short hair after the Griff? Just a variety?
Yeah, I came to a point where I'd had an opportunity to watch a lot more dogs and their style. And when it was time to add another one to the stable, I did a lot of research. I talked to a lot of people and was able to kind of narrow it down to a few different breeders. And I'd really learned that, you know, it wasn't necessarily about buying a breed. I was buying a breeder, and I wanted high quality genetics, but I also wanted support, you know, and I wanted to know that I was getting dogs from a place where they were highly taken care of and they had great facilities and someone that was maybe going to answer some of my stupid questions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all have them, but feeling like you're in a relationship that's safe enough to ask those questions was something that was really important to me. Mm-hmm. So, with all that research, it led me to just an absolutely fantastic breeder out of Iowa. And, I'm, you know, Cedar Creek Gun Dogs has been absolutely amazing. It's Seth Bynum actually helped me with some of that as well. His dog Stellar is from there as well. So
Seth Bynum, for folks that may not know, listening, he's a Ask the Vet series with Purina. He's one of the go-to veterinarians for Purina. Lives in Idaho.
Yeah,
and he's been on the podcast a couple of times too.
Yeah, and especially in the world of genetics, that's kind of what Seth specializes in.
Yeah.
And I was able to learn a lot from Seth, and he does just an absolutely fantastic job of not being persuasive, of just presenting stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, I'm standing on my tippy toes trying to catch, you know, because he's a highly intelligent man. And I couldn't be happier. So just a complete difference in style, especially for what I do. I'm very fortunate living in Idaho where we have, you know, within an hour and a half from my house, I have 9 species.
Mm-hmm.
And that offers a lot of diversity and can really test a dog. But at the same token, a lot of it still kind of falls into, you know, that bigger running kind of dog that can really bore into the country and has a deep level of connectedness, but at the same time can really reach for the horizon and really pays dividends in our country.
So a few minutes ago, your rodeo background showed through.
Uh-oh,
what
did I
catch
do?
It?
I didn't. What'd I do?
When I asked you, about adding the second dog, you said, well, when it came time to add a dog to the stable.
Oh.
Rather than the kennel.
It's amazing. It's amazing the little things that you carry with you into each part of your life. That's for sure.
All right, teacher, you have this background in hunting. You move on to kind of an athletics leadership degree or job. And it still doesn't get you to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And I know part of the recipe here is a friendship.
Yeah.
With our social media guy, Nate, too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So Nate and I first met when he had moved from Michigan to Oregon. And it was, you know, I don't remember what it was. There was some sort of connection via social media. And I just reached out to him and was like, you know, would you like an opportunity to maybe go kill your first jugger?
Huh.
And he said, absolutely. So we just met up and Nate and I went out and struck up a friendship and was able to go take him to harvest his first chucker. And he's just, you know, taken off from there with that. And so all the while we did that, we stayed in contact and he ended up then acquiring a position with Pheasants Forever and moved back home to Michigan and have stayed in contact. And I had been looking for a long time, like I said, for an opportunity to step into the world of conservation one way, shape, or form. And I just one day threw it out there and said, hey, if you ever hear of something that you think I might be interested in or be qualified for, let me know. And he had reached out to me actually a few months prior. There was a position and I had just started with the college I was at. I'd been there like a year and I was like, oh, you know, I'm just a guy that really tries to pride himself with a high level of character. Yeah. And I didn't feel good about it. So I said, you know, thanked him tremendously. But after much deliberation and conversation with my wife, I was like, I'm not ready yet. I wouldn't feel right. I really care about these people. And we had some really great things going, some things that I was trying to change at the institution. And it wasn't the right time. So time went on. And about 3 or 4 months later, I had came home one day and it was one of those days, you know, where it seemed like the sky was falling from every direction. And I pretty much felt like I had a cot at the college too. And my wife was like, I know that you feel a ton of loyalty to these people and that you love what it is that you do right now, but I'm a little concerned about the longevity. Would you take a look at this? And I said, well, you know, okay, what do you got? And she slid the laptop across the kitchen table and it was this job. Well, it wasn't this job.
Right. Because that's a funny
The way that
story, right?
Yeah, well, the way that it's
Are
all
you
happened.
Comfortable
yeah,
telling it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was a different position and I said, well, I don't think you're wrong in your concerns. And I mean, it's been a dream of mine forever. And I know that these people that I work for truly care about me as well. And they're going to want what's best for me. So I said, it's not going to hurt to throw my name in the hat. We'll see what happens. So I threw my name in and got an interview and I felt like things really went well. But, you know, we've all interviewed for positions. We know how that works.
And on the other side, I heard your name, and I know you did really well.
Well, I appreciate
but
that.
But this is a position that we also had a rock star internal candidate for.
Correct. Correct, which I am so fortunate to work with now. Kim Cole is amazing. But, yeah, this is all unbeknownst to me. And quite a bit of time went by. And I'm used to things being, I understand the processes, right? Especially coming from my background and I've hired a lot of people as well. And I know the rate at which things happen. So it wasn't something that I felt was alarming yet. And one day I was driving home, then a couple weeks that went by and I received a phone call and was like, you know, this is the deal. And, you know, we had this really strong internal candidate. I really want you to know, I think you did well. And of course, my mind's already set up like, hey, you know, that's fine. It, mm-hmm. For me, I always view every one of these as just an opportunity to get better. And the interview process was, you know, was fantastic. Everybody was really professional and I enjoyed the time and the conversations I had with everybody there. So it was great. And then he quickly, so all this stuff's running through my mind, mm-hmm. like, okay, well,
ship's already sailed in your mind.
Yeah, it's over. So, and then, you know, Colby Kerber's really good at, you know, holding things, cliffhanger, here it comes that he says, but, I have another position that just want to know if you would be potentially interested in. And, of course we need to go through the process and everything, but I just need to know if you'd be interested in it. And I said, absolutely. So, mm-hmm. Then a bunch more time went by, and lo and behold, I ended up being the guy who was fortunate enough to sit here. So, yeah, the transition has been, it's definitely been drinking through a fire hose for me to some degree, because I can understand on one hand why people sometimes feel hesitant to embark on a whole nother career. It is I don't like to use the word scary, but it kind of is, you know, an entity really well, and you've spent all this time developing in every facet of an institution, and to completely step out and be the new guy again and try to learn the structure and why we title things on job roles the way we do. And, but yeah, my time here thus far has been absolutely amazing. Yeah. The people have been fantastic and very patient and understanding of the transitions that I've been making, and, you know, even learning to work from home is a brand new thing for me. I'm used to seeing hundreds of people every day. You know, I had 350 athletes alone at my last job.
Yeah, that is a dramatic change.
Yeah, it's me and the bird dogs. And
Team meetings.
Right.
Yeah, you see. Yeah. See,
even learning how to run teams, I was like, oh gosh, it just brings my, you know, my computer incompetence to the forefront right off the bat. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's well, I'm sure every business has changed dramatically during COVID, but you know, the Teams world, you know, just seeing, even in a position like yours, you know, I'd see an actual team meeting like maybe once a year. I'd see a National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic, and then it would be phone calls,
so
the world's different.
I do appreciate Teams for that, though. I do like getting to see people's faces. Yeah. It is a lot better than just, hey, I'll call you. Like, right. I think I'm hip now. You know, I walk around with my phone and I'm like, I'm FaceTiming instead of just calling. My wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is what they do. Yeah. This is cool. Yeah.
All right. So I had a little tongue in cheek. You got a big title, Conservation Leadership Program Manager. All right. Tell me what that means in your words.
So, essentially, for me, it's to create conduits for people to find careers into conservation, whether they are someone that is, you know, knew that they wanted to be there at an early age for a long time, to creating exposure and opportunity to cast a wider net to not only create the opportunity for a career, but to showcase all the wonderful things that we do as an organization for Habitat. And advocacy and creating access.
So listeners are like, well, that's somewhat incongruent to what I thought they would have a position at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, right? Like, mission is habitat and, you know, create access. And but this mission has been born out of a need, hasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the other part of our mission is to educate. And essentially, that's what we're doing. And the marriage then with my past experience with this role, really, it's a very, very natural progression. You know, as of late, prior to me coming on, and my predecessor worked in partnership with Pheasants Forever and Bellevue University, and they did just...
Say the university again?
Bellevue
University.
Yeah, out of Nebraska.
Yep.
Don't make the mistake that I did when I first heard Bellevue University. There's a college in Bellevue, Washington,
mm-hmm.
and again, I'm a West Coast guy, so I was like, yeah, no. I made some comment about, oh, I'm your neighbor to the east.
Yeah.
And I was like...
I think, isn't like Bellevue, that's... Bellevue in Washington is like the roots of grunge, like Pearl Jam, 100%, and Nirvana,
100%,
right?
Yeah, I actually. So today I did a presentation at a high school, and there was a student there with a Nirvana sweatshirt on, and I was like, you're awesome. She's like, I know.
The Nebraska version's awesome too, just yes. Not related to grunge.
Yes, 100%.
Maroon 5.
There
maybe,
you go.
Right?
There you go. Yeah, a little Adam Levine for him.
So there's your music trivia if you're keeping score on your bingo card at home. So we've got a partnership with Bellevue University. Basically, this is to sort of foster an interest in people getting biology degrees,
100%,
right?
100%. Yeah, and it goes beyond that even. Mm-hmm. I think for most people, and especially in all my time of working with the youth, that we generally associate working in conservation as a biologist, mm-hmm. or a conservation officer. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting myself in the same group because this was something I didn't have a real good understanding of either, but we have a real misconception that within the world of conservation, there exists a multitude of opportunity,
yep.
to still fly the flag of conservation and do good on the landscape, but do it in a way that connects other people through advocacy, through education, through marketing, mm-hmm. Whatever that may be, to still send the message. You know, you're maybe not the actual boots on the ground, but you're helping to promote the next generation of philanthropists and let's be real, voters, whether they choose to embark on a career within conservation or not.
Yeah, that's so. Two stories that resonate with me. So I'm a senior in college, getting a marketing and advertising degree, and you know, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go work for an ad agency, right? And the owner of the St. Paul Saints baseball team, it was my professor was a season ticket holder of the St. Paul Saints, and brought in the owner of the team to talk about marketing and advertising and PR within professional baseball. And you know, ever since I was knee high to a toadstool, I wanted to be a shortstop for the Detroit Tigers, and never even occurred to me, right? The parallel here, that you can put a degree to work on a wide array of things, whether you're an accountant, a lawyer, or a marketing degree in baseball. And, you know, as the class ends, everybody files out, and I went up to Mike Vecht was his name, and I went up to him, and I want your job. How do I get it?
Yeah.
And I had an internship 2 weeks after that. You know, fast forward 7 years in there, and, you know, I'm looking for my next career. And I have two job opportunities, one to go work for the Detroit Tigers, stay in baseball, or to join Pheasants Forever as the director of public relations. And to your point, you know, there's all sorts of, again, accountant, web developers, IT.
Social media specialists.
Yeah. I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
Especially in the world we live now, you know, trying to convey the importance of how we treat the land, how it impacts water, and doing that through video production, social media.
Right.
You know, there is tremendous opportunity to put all sorts of skills to work in conservation. But you're right that it's just not intuitive.
Right.
You know, I started my very first quarter at college as a biology major.
Yeah.
And I took organic chemistry, and I said, this shit ain't for me, right?
That's where the trade came off the tracks.
Right.
I totally understand.
But you're right. Like, there's a home when this is your passion. And that's really what this job opportunity is about. Try to illuminate those opportunities for people to find a home in biology.
Yep.
Well, find a home in conservation, no matter what degree they have, right?
100%. Yeah, it takes all of us, and each and every one of us, you know, attribute to the mosaic that is conservation. Mm. And without all of us, we just decrease our reach exponentially. Mm. And, you know, using traditional forms are fantastic, and I think we do a great job of still doing that, but we also, you know, have to continue to innovate and to make sure that we are keeping pace with the ever-changing world and, you know, the way that people communicate. Because again, it's we only have Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever may only have so many opportunities, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife may only have so many opportunities. But at the end of the day, you may be really, really passionate still about being a dentist, but love the outdoors. Mm. And that then makes a decision based upon your experiences and your education and your level of exposure in how you choose to, you know, be what, how you choose to, and then the ways you choose to use your philanthropy and also
connect, you know, with the organization.
Right. And your voting.
Yeah. Yeah. You've brought up voting a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
This is, it's maybe not the center bullseye, but it's a concentric circle.
Right? 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting people to understand how conservation and the decisions that are made in every state capital, including the nation's capital, impact all of us.
100%. And people need to understand all the shades of gray, you know, the nuances. And we can't, it's really hard. You know, we live in a world where it feels like we're expected to be experts in everything. And that's really, really difficult, and especially without exposure. So really my goal is to just continue to have the biggest reach that we can possibly have and to expose as many people as possible to it. So at least then they're informed with the right information when they go do make decisions, whether they choose to pursue a career in conservation or not. They still know at the end of the day, there's an organization out there that is fighting so very, very hard to preserve at the lowest common denominator, clean air and clean water. So
all of this that we've been talking about, say, the last 5 minutes, is under the banner of Journey to Conservation Careers, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of your, again, your title, Conservation Leadership Program Manager. That's your title, but then what you do on a daily basis within the organization falls under Journey to Conservation Careers, correct?
That is correct. That is correct, yeah. And there's actually three programs that I take, that are housed underneath my job title. And one of them is Journey to Conservation Careers. The other is an internship program that we're working very, very hard then to be able to provide opportunities for those kids or people that want to pursue a career in conservation. And then also our virtual college and career fair. Those are the three entities that fall under that job title.
So internships organization-wide or particular disciplines, or is that TBD?
Well, a little bit of both. So it's a continually evolving process where we're trying to make sure that we can provide to every person that wants that. Right now, obviously, depending upon where you live and availability, not only within our organization, but some of our partner organizations, which is really fantastic because it does give us the opportunity to throw a wider net. But yeah, it's one of those things where if we have someone that's wanting to internship in something that's really specialized, we're going to do what we can to try to provide that for you.
And if somebody wants to reach out and, hey, their dream is to work in this industry and they want to start with an internship, how do they connect with you?
The Journey to Conservation Careers page on pheasantsforever.org. And it's just, you know, www.pheasantsforever.org/J2CC will take you to the page. My contact information is there. There's also a ton of information about Journey to Conservation Careers, the course that we have in partnership with Bellevue, and the benefits that come from that course, as well as the other programs that we offer.
And talk about the virtual course a little bit. Tell us about that.
So the virtual course is, I wish I could take more credit for the work that had been done with it. It's absolutely fantastic work that was the partnership, and the coursework itself was organized by my predecessor prior to me being here. But
shout out to Marissa.
Yeah, it's a brilliant course, and I really believe offers a tremendous amount of value. Again, coming from education and having an opportunity to look at a lot of different curriculum over the span of my career, they really did a wonderful job with it. But the course right now is slated to where it takes about 100 hours to complete. It is a at your own pace course. It's all online. The module is housed with Bellevue University, which then comes with support from their instructors, and anything on their IT end or anything like that, you have full support. And again, it's complete at your own pace. And any person that completes that course receives a membership to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. They receive an opportunity for an internship program. Again, there's some area dependent kind of stuff on that, but we will do all we can to try to connect you with somebody. You will receive a free admission into our virtual college and career fair, which is TBD coming up this year at some point in time and what that might look like. I know in the past we've had it and we had around 250 participants in that. It was a wildly successful event that I'm really excited to continue. And I think, you know, will do great things for people. And then also, what's something that we've been able to negotiate since my time of being here. Now the courses went through the articulation process with Bellevue University and is now worth 2.3 credits from Bellevue University. So
I know. Why 0.3?
That's I said the same thing. And their only response to me was that, well, some kids need it. And I was like, fair enough. We'll leave it at that.
We'll 2.3.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that. That's what their admissions people went through and decided it was worth. And they know a lot more about it than I do.
That's 0.3 more than it could have been.
Yep. That's right. That's right.
You had a pretty busy day leading up to this. We're recording in person in South Dakota and you were at a high school today.
Yeah. Yeah, so another change kind of in direction that we had this year going into Pheasant Fest due to my hire date and also just kind of the logistics of the center that we're in here.
Yeah,
in space. Right.
Yeah.
It was presented to me of like, is this something that we want to really try to roll out and push this year at Pheasant Fest? And I felt that it was tremendously important to build upon the momentum that Marissa had started here. Again, I think she's done an absolutely fantastic job. And I said, yeah, let me see what I can do to change this. So I started reaching out to some of our partners here in South Dakota and was able to connect with them through South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks. And they then worked to help put me in connection with an area high school that is a sophomore through senior high school and has a student body of 1,600.
Oh, wow.
And
big school.
It's a really big school, and they specialize in their CTE programs, which is career technical education, which is something I have a tremendous amount of experience with, especially coming from a junior college and the pathways programs and how they're working to have classes that create job opportunities for people right out of school and give them classes that have real world workforce type training in them. And it's a perfect fit.
Hmm.
And I pitched the idea to them and presented the coursework, and they were fantastic. They bent over backwards for us. And, I was able to go in and I put together just a fantastic team of people to come in today and to present with me. And we taught four periods today to some of their CTE classes and had effectively a reach of around 200 students today.
What'd
so
you teach?
That was fantastic.
What did the group teach?
So we put together a presentation that was essentially, the premise was obviously to introduce Journey to Conservation careers, but also, again, to just continually advocate and to help people realize that there's so many avenues beyond just being a biologist or being a conservation officer. And the team that I put together comes from just a wide array of backgrounds and representation. And they did just an absolutely fantastic job. Complete shout out to all the people that were involved with that today. They did fantastic.
So Nate was one of them. Kind of came full circle for you today.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. And he did an absolutely wonderful job. We had another PFQF biologist that came and presented, Destiny Flemons, who she was the star of the show.
And she is a biologist.
And she's a biologist, yep. And then we had one of their educational, I can't remember his official title, I feel terrible about this, but we had two employees from South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks as well. So I wanted to have representation at the state level as well as at the national level to really be able to tell their story and how they came to where they were. And to, you know, anytime I think that you can inspire kids and show them that there is so many options and opportunities out there, and that all the things they are learning in school are applicable, and that it's just really up to them and how they choose to apply it. But there is tons of opportunity out there. And I mean, it really started out with as simple as me asking the question of, you know, I'd have 50 kids in front of me, and how many of you like to kayak? How many of you like to camp? And I'd have them raise their hands and keep their hands up. How many of you love to pick up shed antlers? How many of you like to hunt and fish? And there'd always be, I knew this was going to happen, but there'd be like four or five that are sitting there and like, well, we don't like anything. You know, you know how it is. And I'd be like, how many of you like clean air and clean water? Now look around. Every single person has their hands up. So what we are talking about to you today is something that's extremely applicable, and there's opportunities within it in all different ways to represent things that you are all telling me you care about.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it was really powerful, and we got some tremendous feedback.
You
from
did?
That. Yeah, yeah, we did have some
Anything
really great
feedback.
Anything stick out? Yeah, I had one young man come up to me after that's a senior that he was telling me some great stories of hunting and fishing, and he's like, you know, I can't believe all the opportunities that exist. I had almost, it sounds funny because, you know, he's 17 years old.
Yeah.
He's like, I had given up on a chance to find an opportunity in a career in conservation. And now seeing, he's like, you just totally opened my eyes to all the opportunities that exist beyond what I thought I was just going to go be a biologist. Now, like I enjoy working with computers, but I could work with computers and still work in the realm of conservation. Like, yeah, man, it's real.
There's
you
a
can
lot of it.
It's
going to
get
that.
More and more every day.
Yeah.
He's like, this was fantastic. And yeah, he wrote a really great thank you letter to us.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was really, really cool. So, you know, anytime you can go into a situation like that and feel as you've made an impact, it's always really powerful. You know, as a previous educator, it always felt a lot easier because you have the opportunity to develop those relationships. And within the relationships is where there's a lot of magic. But to be able to walk in a place where I don't have any connections, I don't have any relationships, and just let the material itself speak for itself and to make a difference, that's pretty powerful.
Right, in just a couple of hours.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. So we were able to teach to four different classes there, and then we hung out during their lunch blocks. I think there was four different lunch blocks we were there, and we had different kids come up and ask questions and learn about Pheasant Fest. Excuse me. Learn about Pheasant Fest and learn more about Journey to Conservation Careers. And yeah, it was a great time.
So as I round third and head towards home, there's your baseball analogy.
I know. You've always got one.
I got something. Give me your vision. You know, it's pretty intuitive based on the conversation we had, but put it into your words where you're taking this program and in your role, which is, while it's not completely new, it's relatively new for the organization.
Right. I would just have to go back to what I said earlier to cast the absolute widest net that we possibly can. I think it's really important that we have materials and opportunities and present avenues for people who know that that's the way that they want to go, who, you know, people like me who grew up hunting and fishing and just don't know all the opportunities that there is, but also equally important in going out and by casting the widest net we can, we then give people an opportunity to see it that maybe grew up in an urban area or haven't had as fortunate of an upbringing as I had to have the exposure and to be that first exposure, to be the light that maybe, you know, sparks them to go in a direction that they never thought they would. And at a bare minimum, create this deep appreciation for the natural world and wanting to conserve it.
Right. I'm in voting that way down the road.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Folks, if you're interested in what we've been talking about, as Levi mentioned, type in Journey to Conservation Careers on the Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever website. It'll take you to our education page and you can learn more. If you're a school administrator or a teacher and you want to get connected, and I know there's a lot of you out there in our Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapter volunteer family, maybe your listeners at large that want to learn more, maybe you want to get involved in the curriculum, see if you can bring some of this stuff to your education platform, whatever that may be. Levi's email, very easy, LDAY at pheasantsforever.org. He's not an action hero. He's no longer a rodeo clown. He is. You like that?
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that.
He is your connection to a journey to conservation career. So, get in touch. There's we could use more biologists. That was one of the questions I didn't ask you. What is the state of the state for biologists out there?
Well, I think I've heard of quite a few different things. And, you know, again, some of it comes from me being brand new into this industry and having some of my own preconceived conceptions and also wanting to make sure that I was representing in a way that was truthful on the landscape. So This is a little tougher question for me to answer, but I have to just turn right back and look at our programs. And when I think about the reason that we have those programs is to continue to feed the future, yeah. Regardless of what state we're in right now. You know, we always need to be thinking about the next horizon and doing all we can to continually backfill and to grow and to meet the changes that we're going to see on the landscape. Which, you know, I think about our internship program. The basis of any internship program is to help to create an opportunity, not just for the person to see what the career's about, but also to gain some of those skills that I come from academia. Like, I know what skills we teach, and I know what skills are sometimes lacking. And sometimes without an internship program, we lack that practical application. We lack that ability to have a conversation with the farmer. We lack the ability to connect with people because those aren't things that necessarily can be taught. They're things that we have to go and experience and we have to learn. And I think that through the programs that we're offering, we're providing a much greater opportunity to then have a young biologist then have the exposure and have that chance to have some of those conversations that maybe they haven't had before. And they're just more equipped. And the more tools we put in people's tool belt, the better they are.
Yeah, and it grounded in authenticity that way.
Yeah.
Rather than just reading it out of a textbook.
It's 100%.
Coming out of their mouth, and it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you, folks, for listening. I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.